Today's shir is Masech Bamutzi, Daf Ayin Beis Amar Aleph. We will begin Daf Ayin Beis Amar Aleph, three lines from the top. Tana Rabbanan. It says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Yisrael Shalav Amos Menachri Beribis. If a Jew borrowed money from a Nachri, he would ribis. V'zakon Alav Milva. And then he bundled it all up, that instead of paying interest payments per payment, he bundled it up that it should be one big sum. And then Venizgayer, and now the Nachri becomes a ger. So even though we know the ger Shenizgay could cut the Shnodah dummy, as the Nachri becomes a ger, he's considered as a completely newborn, new individual, that doesn't mean that he, for Dine Mamis, that applies. And whatever loans were owed to him, or money that he owed to others, he's still obligated to pay, even though he became a ger. So what happened here was the Vinizgayer, and now he's a Yisrael who's not allowed to pay ribis. Im kaidim shenizgay zaken v'lo b'milva, if he bundled this all up into one flat sum before he became a ger, goyves a keren v'goyves a ribis. He's allowed to collect from the Yisrael both the Karen and the Ribbis, because once it's now one lump sum, we don't look at the payments as Ribbis payments, we look at the payments as one lump sum. Although there is a very big machlokes rishonim, how do we look at this? Is it that we look at this one lump sum and even the Ribbis payments that would do for after he became a ger, since they were lumped together before he became a ger, the halacha is that it's not considered ribbis, was the only money that could be collected is the money that was owed from the ribbis that was owed from before he became a ger. So given he was owed that money from before he became a ger, and given that now it's not being paid as a ribbis payment, but rather it's being paid as a lump sum loan payment, that's why the halacha is that it's paid. But the money that is owed as ribbis, which is only due after the geiris, that part, even though it was lumped into a loan, into one lump sum, he doesn't get. Or since it was all lumped together, the fact that it was only owed after became Hager is immaterial. A big machlokes rishonim. However, and therefore, as we just explained, v'm achash nizgayer zokon alav milva, but if he only went through this procedure of making this into one lump sum, but he only decided to do so after he became Hager, so now that he's Hager, the halacha is that he's not allowed to collect ribbis, obviously. The halacha is therefore, since at this point, He may not collect ribbis. So goyves a keren, he'll be allowed to collect the principal. He's allowed to collect the principal, but he's not allowed to collect the ribbis because he's now Baruch Shem, a Jew who's not allowed to collect. The Ar Samech explains why is this permissible. And he says, since according to the Rishonim, that the accruing of interest stops at the time of the loan, so since at the beginning the loan was on interest, if there's any change to the terms of the loan due to the conversion, we're allowed to say that it was what was there from before has nothing to do with what's there now. Became, says the Gemara, Nachri Shalav Amos Mi'Yisrael Baribis. A Nachri borrowed money from Yisrael with ribbis, the zakon alav milva, and now he turned it into one lump sum, the nizgayer, and now the Nachri whose deloiva became a ger, im adloin nizgayin zakon alav milva, if it was turned into a lump sum before the geiris, so then goyves a keren v'goyves a ribbis. The Yisrael is entitled to collect both the Karen and the Ribbis. Could this, as we just explained, is all from before he became a Ger. However, in Mishnah's Geir Zokhna Lava Milva, first he became a Ger, and then they decided to lump it into one amount. And Goyvus a Keren, he'll be allowed to collect, the Yisrael will be allowed to collect the Keren. However, the Yisrael will not be allowed to, and Goyvus a Ribbis, he won't be allowed to collect the Ribbis. And the reason is, explained the Kovet Shmus, that even though there are a number of Lavin, as we've learned and will learn, by Ribbis, and one of the Lavin is Loisisimar Lav Neshech, another Lav is Vekaspecha Loisitin Lav Neshech, so that doesn't apply, could that those Lavin are violated at the time of the loan, and here, at the time of the loan, he was a Nachri. But there's also another lav involved in collecting ribbis, and that's the lav of loisikach miitoi neshech v'tarbis, and that lav applies even after that lav applies at the time of collection. So if the time of collection, he, as we are describing now, he's a Yisrael, since at the time of collection he's a Yisrael, we're not allowed to collect ribbis from him. Rav Yossi disagrees, and he says, Nachri shenava mas Yisrael b'ribis. If a Nachri borrowed money from Yisrael with ribis, benkach or benkach, under all circumstances, goyves a keren with goyves a ribis. The Yisrael will be allowed to collect both the keren and the ribis. And says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chizda, Amar Rav Huna, the halacha is Rav Yossi. The halacha is like Rav Yossi. I saw a machlokes rishonim, that some rishonim hold that this opinion of Rabbi Yossi is only if you have at least Zokhna Lava Milva that was turned into one lump sum. And some Rishonim say that no, Rabbi Yossi's halacha will apply under all circumstances. And Rabbi Yossi's halacha will apply even if it wasn't made into a lump sum. Because why? Says the Gemara, Amar Rava Mantama, the Maitama, Rabbi Yossi, why does Rabbi Yossi take this lenient view? The reason lets a Yisrael collect ribbis from an individual who is currently a Jew, today Shloi Yomru, that people should not come to accuse this ger, that the reason he became a ger is only Beshvil Moisim, this guy is there. He became a ger to avoid having to pay ribbis. And in order not that people to avoid people saying this and believing this, they were allowed to, the Chacham said that you're allowed to collect the Yisrael may continue collecting the ribbis. The Rishonim explain how can Chachamim do that, because it's not, the Shloyok Chacham Dovim, that's a case of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. And I saw that the Achronim explained what does it mean when they say it means Hefker Bezdin Hefker. What it means is that the Chachamim, with their authority of Hefker Bezdin Hefker, are actually saying that this money is not the Ger's money, and the money is Hefker. And by saying that the money is Hefker, what they are essentially saying is that there's no Ribbis. Ribbis is when a Loiva pays a Malva. Here, we're not the Chum with the Hefker Bezdin Hefker approach, say that this money doesn't belong to the Ger, and therefore there's no Ribbis concern. Tana Bottom. Shtar Shakosaba is of a shtar that's written in it, a ribis. Kainzunaisai, we penalize the malva for having written such a shtar. Vein a goiver, and he can't collect with the shtar. Loyas a karen, the loyas a ribis. Not the principal, nor the ribis. Devre Rameya. The Chamayim, whereas the Chum's opinion is, goivus a karen, he could collect the principal, vein a goivus a ribis. The Tosfos points out that when Rameyah says that you can't collect with this shtar, even money that the loiva has, it doesn't make a difference. Rameyah's opinion is that we want to make a punishment for the person who used such a shtar, and since we want to penalize him, that's why he can't use the shtar under any circumstances. So I saw that the Sefer Tosfos asks that we're penalizing the malva. But as we've mentioned, and we're going to learn a Mishnah at the end of our perek, that in every ribis transaction, it's not just the loiva who's doing it, malva who's doing an aveira, but the loiva is also doing an aveira. And here, why is the malva being penalized more than the loiva? So Tosfos answers that we can't penalize the loiva. He doesn't. The malva lent the money, so we say don't get back your money. But I saw the halacha actually some rishonim suggest is Rameya doesn't mean to be so nice to the loiva completely at the expense of the malva, and there's some that suggest that the loiva will have to pay. That just that the loiva won't give it to the malva will have to become, will have to give the money to not get off the hook, but will have to give the money to tzedakah. Says the Gemara, "Vamayka miflgi." Ask the Gemara, "What is the basis of the machloikis of Rameya and the Chachamim? Rameya is of a kansina term is sura. We want to penalize him even on the principle because of the ribis. Rabbanan savi." Like it's seen in Terem Mishim Yisura, we don't do so. So Tosfos asks a question. According to the Chachamim, the shtar is still considered a valid shtar because, this, and therefore you could use it to collect the principal. We of course won't collect ribis, but we will collect the principal. But the question is, how could the shtar, asked Tosfos, be considered a valid shtar? As we keep on quoting the Mishnah later in our parak, the halacha is that aren't supposed to participate in a shtar that has an atribus. Here we have a situation where Adam did participate in that shtar, and shouldn't that make the Adam psulim, disqualified Adam, which will disqualify the shtar? So Tosfos gives two truths. And one teretz Tosfos suggests is that the ribis we're speaking about here is ribis de rabbanon, and edim who are signed on a shtar with ribis de rabbanon don't become permanently disqualified. Another explanation that Tosfos offers is that these edim were not aware that edim who sign on a shtar with ribis become edim psulim, they become disqualify them. And therefore, even though, of course, they should not have signed on the shtar, they don't become disqualified by having signed the shtar. Says the Gemara, Tanan Hossam, the Mishnah that we learned earlier in our Masechta on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, Shtari Choyv HaMugdomim, that there's a shtar that was predated, that the date of the shtar is actually before the loan actually took place. Psulim, and we're not allowed to collect from this shtar. We often discuss in our shiurim that the purpose of having a document is that you can be able to collect from nechasim shvadim. All of the loiva's assets become mortgaged to the loan. But if this loan document is disqualified because it was written with the wrong earlier date, then you can't use it. V'mecharim, but a shtar with a post-dated shtar is ksherim. And the Gemara explains, Megdama my psulim, a shtar with an earlier date, wise apostle, ne'er the loigovim zman rishin, you can't collect from the date on the shtar because that is prior to the loan. But as the Gemara, yigvu mizman shmeni, it should still be a good shtar, and we should be allowed to use it to collect from when the loan did actually take place. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Machlokes Shnuya. This question, do we completely disqualify the shtar, even though we should perhaps suggest that from the earlier date, of course we can't collect, but maybe we should be able to collect from the later date, is connected, suggest the Gemara, to our shtar that we just had, where Ramey says that a shtar that has in it ribis is completely disqualified, and Rabbanan don't hold that way. Remeyihi. And we'll have to say that the opinion that says that the shtar is disqualified is following the opinion of Rameya. So the question that Tosfos asks, how could anybody suggest that this shtar could be used for collecting? How could anybody suggest that we could use the shtar for collecting? It's a false document. It has the wrong date. And if it has the wrong date, we should not be allowed to use it. Says Tosfos that there are people that are saying testimony that the Eidim were forced to sign on an earlier date. And therefore, that it's not therefore necessarily a disqualified shtar. Another explanation Tosfos says that the Eidim were not aware that the shtar was, they weren't aware of the date. They got confused with the date. Another test the Rishonim gave is that when the Eidim signed on the shtar, that was actually what was supposed to happen. They signed on the shtar today, and there was a loan that was supposed to take place today. But what actually happened was that the loan did not take place today. What actually happened was that the loan took place later. But when the Eidim signed on the shtar was really a good shtar. And therefore, since it was a good shtar, therefore, we can't fault the Eidim, and we can't say that the shtar is completely false. Rabbi Yochanan says that even the Rabbanan, who in the shtar in our shir today, that we have the principal and the interest, and they take the approach that we can't, of course, collect the interest, but we could collect the principal, says the Gemara, says Rabbi Yochanan, in this shtar, in the shtar Mugdamim, the predated shtar, even the Rabbanan will agree that you can't use that shtar. Because once the shtar, says the Gemara, has the wrong date, the Rabbanan are concerned, Gzeira Shema Yigvim is Man Rishon. We may use the earlier, we may get confused and use the earlier date. And because of the concern that that may happen, we can't use the shtar under any circumstances, even according to Rabbanan. Says the Rabbanan, who gave the Mashkin Leper, they saw the Chavre. A person borrowed money from somebody else and he put up his vineyard for collateral, and the deal was that the person will, that the malva will eat from the fruits of that vineyard, and that's how he'll be paid up what's owed to him. Achla, it says the Gemara Tlashni, the malva ate from that field for 3 years. Amalei, and now the malva was very interested to become the full-fledged owner of that field. Amalei, so now he approaches the loiva, and he says to him, if I want to buy it, and if you sell it, mutav. Viloy, but if you refuse to sell it to me, kavishna lelishtar mishkanta, I will take the shtar, the document that indicates that my presence on this field is only because it's mortgaged to me. Vamina, and I'll tell everybody lekuchi biyadi. And the way to understand the Gemara is that because he was on the field for 3 years, as we're going to learn in Masechta Bava Basra, if somebody's in a property for 3 years and nobody raised the protest, it's an indication that it's his field. Moreover, explains the Ritva, there were no Eidim that he entered this field only as a mashkin holder. And because there's no Eidim that he entered this field as a mashkin holder, and he was on the field for 3 years, there's a real concern. There's a real concern that the Eidim, that he's going to be able to get away with it. That was the leverage that he used to be able to force him to sell the field to him. So the loiva is in a predicament. So what the loiva did was, Ozul kam akne lebnoi katan. He did a kinyan that he sold the field to his son. Why, explains the Ritva and the Meiri, could he just not be Mois Medah? Mois Medah means that he could let know the world that this is being done under duress, because he was concerned that when he was ultimately going to sell the field to the Malva, who's forcing him to sell the field to him, the Malva will require that the document that of sale say that he's being Mevatel, that he's nullifying if he was ever Mois Medah. And then after he sold it to his son, now he sold it to the Malva. Zvina, says the Gemara, Vadileva Zvina. The sale to the son is certainly not a meaningful sale, because since he didn't sell it to him, it was only a way to prevent the Malva from getting the field. However, Zuzi b'malva k'shtar adami, he wrote the shtar, and there's a shtar that says that money is old, and the question is, what will be the halacha if that field is now taken away? Even though the shtar doesn't make it into a valid mechira, what it can accomplish, if the loiva doesn't have money, the question is, can the lekuchas give him the chos mishabadim? A dimmel kamilva per dummy, it's as if there's no shtar at all, and therefore, since it's no shtar at all, then ain't a goyim in the chosm shabbatim. In other words, the Gemara's question is that the shtar was written that like a shtar is supposed to be written, and we've learned many times in a masechta that a shtar is supposed to be written when a chrayis. That it means that if the shtar will be taken away from the buyer because he had obligations, then the seller has to replace that shtar. So here we're asking, even though the sale wasn't really considered a full-fledged sale, it should be considered as if there's a chrayis in the shtar, and therefore, if the loiva can't pay his obligation, he'll be able to collect the loan from the chosm shabadim or not. Amar bai v'lav hainad Rav Asi. So he said to him, isn't that what Rav Asi taught us? Amar Rav Asi, moid b'shtar shekosvay. If somebody admits that the shtar is a good shtar, and it's tzorich l'kaimai, there's no need for kiyum. Kiyum is a subject that we've discussed, that when there's a question about the validity of a shtar, we have to verify it, we have to certify it. The goyvim and the chasim shabadim. So here too, even though the shtar is not a valid shtar, since the loiva is admitting that he wrote the shtar, and it's considered a good shtar, and therefore, it could be used to collect from Nechasim Mishabadim. So even though the Mechira of the father to the son wasn't a good Mechira, since the Loiva is admitting that he wrote the Shtar, and he owes money to the Malva, and he can't say that he could collect Achrayis, he could collect even from Nechasim Mishabadim. Amalei Rav Amidami Hasam, when you have a real sale, the shtar is nitin likosef, could be written. And therefore, since it's a shtar that ought to be written, that shtar could be used to collect from the chosm shabadim. Hocha, whereas here, loy nitin likosef, the shtar should never have been written, because the whole thing was just to get the malva off his back. And therefore, you can't use the shtar under any circumstances. Our Gemara just taught us the statement, amoyd b'shtar shekosvoy, ain't tzorach l'kaimoy. Says the Noim Alamelech, Moida b'shtar shekosvoy. If a person is Moida, if a person admits to the Averis that he has done, ain't tzarech l'kaimai. That prevents him from needing to get punished. He explains that a person is punished for his Averis until he admits that he has done the Avera. But once the person admits that he has done the Avera, ain't tzarech l'kaimai, then that's enough. He'll know to do tshuva, and he won't be punished. Yosem Arayim Vekamel HaShmatza, Rava said over that a shtar that shouldn't have been written is a meaningless shtar. Amalei Ravina Lameima, Elohadam Rabbi Yochanan said that the reason a shtar, Choyv HaMekdomim, a predated shtar, is possible. Because we're concerned, Gzeri Shemi Yigovim Mizman Rishon, that people will not realize that the date is the wrong date. And they're going to collect from the Chosm Shabadim from the earlier date. Why do we say that reason? We should have said a much simpler reason. Loi niton likosev, a predated shtar, as we've been learning, is not a shtar that should be written. Amalei, so Merema said to Ravina, Hachi Ashta, Chosm na the likosem is my rishon. A shtar mikdom, you shouldn't have written the earlier date. Aval niton likosem is my sheni, the later date, when it alone took place, is perfectly legitimate. Hacha, where the the sale was really not a sale altogether, like nitin likasev, it shouldn't have been written, and we can't use, and we therefore can't compare the two situations. Ela hadatanya, we learned in Masech the Gittin daf mem ches on the bays, you can't collect from the chosum shabadim for the payers that were eaten or for the property improvement. The shvachke kares ketzad, and the Gemara explains itself. Harei shegozel sodom echaveri. Somebody stole a property from somebody else, and then this gazlan, this thief, machulachra, sold that stolen property to someone else, and hishbicha, and the person to whom he sold it made improvements in the field. And now the victim, the original victim, comes, and he takes it from this buyer. Harei yoytz metachas yodai, shugayva. So now, when this buyer goes back to the gazlan, shugayva, and he wants to collect for his loss, goyva sakemel chosum shabadim, he could collect from this gazlan's chosum shabadim, the shvach goyva chosum neichayim. But the question is, if a shtar that's not supposed to be written is meaningless, so if this shtar is a shtar that was loy nitan lekosev, so how could he collect from the chosum shabadim? We're learning, yes, you can't collect from the Mechasim Shabbatim for the improvements you made in the field. But for the price that this buyer from the Gazlan paid for the field, he is entitled to go to the Mechasim Shabbatim. But why is he entitled to go to the Mechasim Shabbatim based on a shtar that was like Nita Lekasev? So in order to understand the Gemara, we have to review a Gemara that we learned earlier in our Masechta on Daf Tezvav Amabez. The Gemara there discusses somebody who stole a property and sold it, and now he went and bought that property from the people whom he stole it from. So the halacha is that he can't go to the buyer and say that I had no right to sell this property to you, because at the time I sold it to you, it was stolen property. Rather, we explained that the reason he bought the property from the people whom he stole from, he bought it on behalf of the people that bought it from him, because he wanted that sale to be valid. And he knew as long as it's a stolen piece of property, it can't be considered valid. That's the halacha we learned on Daf Tezvav Amabez. And there we had a machlokes amaroyim, how we understand what we just said. Mazutra said that we don't want that when the victim, the person from whom the property was stolen, will go to the person who bought the property, will say that you're a gazlan. So in order to avoid him being called a gazlan, he bought the property, so the person who bought it from him should be able to keep it. Ravashi says that he wants to keep the sale valid. He doesn't want that the sale should be nullified. And the Gemara explained that what's the nafkamina between these two reasons, where he didn't sell the property, but he gave the property away as a gift. According to Mazutra, he could take it away from the person who he gave it to as a gift. There's no concern, well, the person's going to say, how did you sell me stolen property? I didn't sell it to you, I gave it to you. Whereas, according to Ravashi, because since he doesn't want to have a bad reputation, even if he gave it away, it doesn't make a difference. It'll stay by the person whom he gave it to, even though he gave it to him before he had bought it, when it was still a stolen property. Says the Gemara, Hachi Hashta, when you sell a stolen property, whether we follow the opinion that the person doesn't want to have be called a gazlan, or that people should say that he's an honest person, he gives something, he sells something, he's honest, he's going to pay off the person from whom he stole, as we just explained, and like that, make the shtar into a good shtar. Hachop, but when the person in our story sold the property to his son, which the entire purpose of doing so was levruchim in ekumachavin, to get out of the malva's claim that you better sell it to me, so shtar mekayim, like that you're going to call a shtar. So what the Gemara, I think, means to say is that in the case of a stolen property, that shtar has the potential to be a good shtar. How does that shtar have the potential to be a good shtar when the gazlan will ultimately buy the property back from the true owners? So since there's a potential possibility that that shtar will be a good shtar, that's a good enough reason. That's a good enough reason to make the shtar a good shtar. Whereas, and that's why we could rely and work with that shtar. In the shtar of our Gemara, where the father sold the property to the son just to avoid his malva's leverage over him, in that case, that shtar is never going to be a good shtar. A shtar which will never have the potential of being a good shtar cannot be used in any way. We've learned this halacha many times. Says the Mishnah, Ein Paiskin Malaperis, that I go and I buy fruit today that should be delivered at a later time when the price will be higher. This halacha is only before there's official price for this produce that I'm buying. However, Yotza Ashar, if there's an official price come out for this property, Maiskim, then I could make such a contract is permissible. And the reason is, because even though the person who is selling this future doesn't necessarily have it, but he could have it easily. Yesh Lazeh, he could get it. The Shas Chuvas Marsham, Chelik Hay Simonim Aleph, discusses that somebody goes and orders merchandise from a certain merchant. For example, somebody buys tefillin from a cipher, and he wants this specific cipher. And this now the question is, this cipher doesn't have the tefillin currently. He has to write them. Could that be okay? On one hand, we can make an argument. Like the Gemara just said, Ein lezeh yesh lezeh. Maybe the cipher doesn't have tefillin currently, but he could get it from somewhere else. On the other hand, I want the tefillin specifically from this cipher. The fact that the cipher from whom I'm ordering the tefillin to get a pair of tefillin elsewhere, but that isn't the tefillin that I want. That also aren't the tefillin that I'm ordering. And he says that therefore you can't do it. What you're allowed to do is you can order tefillin and make a price and everybody will have to remain with that price. But to say that I'm ordering tefillin now based on a future price because he could get tefillin elsewhere, he can't get the tefillin. And the same question will come up if somebody ordered a car, and the car that I want isn't available. Is the fact that there are other cars available good enough? Or no, I want this car, and this car is not available, so he can't say, Api she'en lezeh, yesh lezeh. Continues the Mishnah. Let's say the person who I'm making the contract with, is the first person who cuts grain. So there's no one else with grain, and the price hasn't been established yet because nobody has grain. Says the Gemara, Paisikimai. You can make a deal, even though he only has grain that isn't even completely ripened. Alagodish. If you have grain that hasn't been completely processed, an ambitcha anovim, or grapes, a matan shalzaisim, on olives, a beim shayotzer, on pieces of earthenware, of cement, al sid mishishaka bekivshe, and on cement once it was put into the furnace. And all these cases, as long as the person from whom I'm buying has this much, then it's considered that I could buy from him. And even though it's early in the season and the prices haven't been established. Furthermore, says the Mishnah, you could make a contract on fertilizer. Because fertilizer, the Rishonim explain, is always available. And therefore, Ein lezeh, yesh lezeh. Rabbi Yosef Omer, no, only if the person with whom I'm making the contract has fertilizer available. And if he doesn't have fertilizer available, I cannot enter into contract. The Chamamatirim. The Mishnah says that you can make a contract that if the time that the fruit will go down. That means if I gave a seller and I contracted that for that seller, I'm going to get 4 saw of fruit, even if the price of fruit goes up. You can make a contract that if the price of the fruit goes down and you'll get 10 saw for the seller, he'll have to give me 10 saw. Because he, even though he became the owner now, and therefore he has to give him at the value that it had now. And if they go down, then I could say that it shouldn't be mine until they get delivered to me. Even though he didn't make up with him that price, either he could say, and then at the time for delivery, the price changes, and I want according to the new price. He could say, give me according to the current price, or give me back my money. Telling my eyesight. You can't just make a contract based on a price that's established. And the way the Rishonim explain, there were a number of phases in prices getting established. First, there were Shar Shalai Yoris, the stores in the villages that don't sell a lot of grain have grain, and that's the first phase. And that's not a very strong price. It could change. The next is Shar Shel Krochim, and that's what the Gemara says is Kedormis. They have a lot of merchandise, and therefore it's much more of an established price. And then you have the Kalbi V'Arbi, that's when the warehouses are full of this, and that's a very firm price. Even if the price was established in the big store, says the price is not, when he, Rabbi Yochanan said the price is not considered an established price, that's the first phase. The Shuk Shalayaris, Loi Kaviyat Tarayu, where it's not really a very firm price. Says the Gemara, that even if the price has been established in the large, in the cities, in the large stores, it's not considered a firm price. Ask the Gemara, El Masnis Miktani, we just finished learning the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Ein Paiskan HaPeris HaChiyetze Ashar, but the Mishnah says, Yotza Ashar, once the price has been established, Paskim. But how would Rabbi Yochanan explain that Mishkan? Hechem Mishkach Slah, says the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan is going, according to the Havamina, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan will explain that the Masnissan is speaking about, Bechiti da Kalbi V'Arba, the Moshech Tar Tfei. That when is it considered that the price is established, according to the Gemara's Havamina? The Gemara and the Havamina assume that it's only considered an established price when it's the price for the that's already, there's enough in the warehouses. For as we just explained, when there's enough in the warehouses, that's typically a price that's going to last for quite a while. Since that's a price that's going to last for quite a while, that's a price that Rabbi Yochanan says we could build on. But actually, the maskana of the Gemara is, it doesn't have to be that price. As long as you already have price established in the dormis, in the big stores, in the city, that's already halachically considered an established price. Tarabana ein paiskin ala peiris, the halacha that we just learned, we can't write a contract, achiyetze ashar, yotza ashar, but once the price has established, poiskin. And as the Mishnah explained, the reason being, if you have grain that hasn't been completely dried, and therefore they're cheaper, and you get 4 saw for a seller, and you shonus, dry grain, the price is higher, you only get 3 saw for a seller, Ain't Paiskim. You can't make a contract that you're going to get 4 saw of dry grain for a seller, because it's not going, when they dry, you lose some of the grain. So when he's giving him now a seller for 4 saw for moist grain, the halacha is that you're going to be getting more than you deserve, and therefore it's ribis. You only can make this kind of a contract when the both types of grain are available. If you have poor people who are collecting matanas aniyim, and their tefuah is typically very cheap, because there's all sorts of poor quality grain mixed in, ma'arba, and therefore their grain is sold at the rate of 4 saw for a seller. Ulkal adam, but everybody regular grain is sold at the rate of sola. Ain paiskim, you can't make a contract. Achiyetz ashar l'loiker l'maiker. You can't make a contract for lakutis unless the price for the other grain has also been established. I'm Omer of Nachman, that even though you can't make a price based on the lakutis price, it's not considered yotza ashar if only the lakutis price is available. Poiskin lakutis, if I want to buy that type of grain and the price for that grain has been established, so I can buy that grain. Amalei Rav Nachman, my shloah halakit, why could you make this kind of a contract? This lay yozim malakut chavrei. Because even if this seller doesn't have lakutis type of grain, he could get it for someone else. So says the Gemara, Bal Bayis Nami, Yozim Malukot. Amalei, Bal Bayis Selabah Milslam Ezim Malukot. A regular storekeeper doesn't sell lakutis because it's not quality grain. It's just grain that's picked up as matnas aniyim. V'bayis Eimah Mandi Yov Zuzi L'Bal Bayis. If I'm making a contract with a storekeeper, he doesn't have lakutis available. A perishapiyov, and the fact that lakutis may be available is insignificant. Amar Rav Sheshes, Amar Rav Huna, Ein Lovin Al Shah Shabashok. We're not allowed to make a loan that if I don't pay you up to a certain point, I'm going to pay you according to the current rate. Because even though we can make a contract, I'm paying a contract, so I'm paying for it. So it's Mekech U'Memker. But that's why there's no ribis concern. But if I'm borrowing money based on a future price, that is ribis. Amalei Rav Yosef ben Chamal Rav Sheshes, Amalei Rav Yosef ben Abel Rav Sheshes, Umi Amar Rav Huna Hachi, Vaboy Minei Rav Huna, Hanib Bnei Rav, the yeshiva students, the Yasvi B'Tishrei, they borrow money in Tishrei, Upara B'Tavis, and they pay back in Tavis, Shari Asur. And the question is that a permissible? They pay back with Paris according to the price of Tishrei, which is a more expensive price. Since I have plenty chitim available, the boy Zavni apparently, I could have bought those Paris with the money. So we see that you're allowed to borrow money with the condition that I'll pay according to the rate that will be later. Mikaros of Rav Huna ain't loving, says the Gemara. At the beginning, he assumed that you can't borrow money on something based on the price on an established place. However, Kimin Shamal Adam Shmuel Bar Hechi Amar Rav Huna loving, says the Gemara. Once he heard that Alacha Ama Iunami, he agreed that loving one can borrow money based on an established price that could be set as the benchmark for the money for what I owe you back for what I borrowed for you.